So I want to read some notes on Siddhadeva. And nowadays, it's a phenomenon spreading everywhere. Devotees don't really want to chant very many rounds, nor do they want to develop a devotional mood or enter into a very deep understanding of Siddhanta. No one can chant all day like Haridas Thakur. They can't even chant one round of Hare Krishna mantra with their minds absorbed in Krishna. We have so many demands and needs and requirements for our body and things related to our body, like desires for name, fame, and fortune. And we're full of lust and greed and other worldly desires. And we still expect that our Siddhadeva will somehow manifest. Our minds can't concentrate on Krishna's pastimes, yet we want Siddhadeva. We think that cheaply we can quickly and easily attain Siddhadeva, as easily as one buys a rasgulla. Such neophyte devotees expect to immediately jump into perfection. They're not mature in bhakti, but artificially they think, I've now achieved my Siddhadeva. The previous acharyas used to think and act like us. Rupa Goswami and other acharyas used to do as we do. From the beginning stage of their devotional lives, they remember their Siddhadevas, and their Siddhadevas they serve Krishna. But actually, such ideas or speculations are quite wrong. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan never acted like this. They gave mercy to everyone by setting an example in their own lives, by beginning from Shraddha and their devotional activities and gradually evolving through Shraddha to sadhana, sadhusanga, bhajana, kriya, nartanivritti, nishcha, etc. If you look at Jiva Dharma by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he describes all the principles and practices of bhakti all the way to the attaining of one Siddhadeva. He also explained Ekadash Bhav, the 11 items of perfection Siddhadeva, Siddha Sambandha, Siddha Vyas, Siddha Nan, Siddha Rup, Siddha Yuta, Siddha Vesh, Siddha Vas, Parakashta Vas, Palidasi Bhav. But when did he discuss these? Bhaktivinoda Thakur discussed the 11 items of Siddhadeva in the next to the last chapter of Jiva Dharma, not in the beginning. In Jiva Dharma, the spiritual master taught the principles of Siddhadeva to the disciple when Vijay Kumar and Bhadranath were advanced in Krishna consciousness. They were actually free from all anarthas and material desires. Vijay Kumar had been chanting, remembering Krishna 24 hours a day and experiencing different symptoms of Baba when he chanted the holy name, which is described in the story of Jiva Dharma. Sometimes people cite the example that Bhaktivinoda describes Ekadash Bhava or Siddha Pranali and Harinam Chintamani and also Jiva Dharma, which he does. But when? Vijay understood and realized the meaning of Baba, Anubhava, Sattvic Bhavas, Vyavachari Bhavas. And he realized and he understood that the mixture of these will produce bhakti ras. He had become truly humble, Trinadapi Sunichena. He was on the stage of Bhava Vasta, Bhava Bhakti. So what is the qualification of a disciple to receive Siddhadeva or Ekadash Bhav? Firstly, as is taught by Bhaktivinoda, he must be learned in all the bhakti tattvas. He must be attached to chanting the holy name, and he must be experiencing different ecstasies when he's chanting the holy name. He must exhibit genuine humility. He must realize the actual meaning of the verse, Trinadapi Sunichena. And he must be absorbed 24 hours a day in chanting and remembering Krishna. Celestial damsels could not disturb the Krishna consciousness of Haridas Thakur. Yet we see that even Haridas Thakur was not engaged in advanced practices of devotion in the Goswami's line, like Vijay and Jiva Dharma. Because we don't read anything about Haridas Thakur doing Siddha Pranali or meditating, it was simply chanting. And he was so advanced and so high. Only devotees like Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das, and Sanatana Goswami followed these principles of Raganuga Bhajan and Mantri Srup Smarana Bhajan. Devotees must become mature in bhakti, come to the stage of Shraddha, then Sadhusanga, Bhajana Kriya, Nartanivritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti. At the stage of Bhav, when one has no scent of desire for sense gratification, and he's free from all material thoughts and habits, Siddhadeva will automatically manifest. This is the teachings of our parampara and the Chaitanya Saraswat Sampradaya. From Bhaktivinoda Thakur to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. This is the problem because many times people cite Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book. Look, see, you sing the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and you say you read the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but he's talking about Siddha Pranali, but you don't give it. You don't give it. Nobody officially gives it. But we say it's not, we don't give it, it's given. There's 8 steps to realize a Siddhadeya. And Bhajan Rahasya and Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that when Siddhadeva will manifest, he describes Lord Chaitanya's Shikshastakam, which discusses the 8 stages of advancement in bhakti from Shraddha to Prem. Nadanana Janana Sundaram, this represents ruchi, taste for bhajan. When we're practicing devotional service in good association, everything will develop automatically. Then we will realize the 5th shloka, Ainanda Tanashakinkaram, Patitambamashume Bhambado, Kripyatava Parapanka Jasti Dirdali Sadrisham Pijantaya. This stage of Siddhadeya, at this stage, Siddhadeya begins to manifest as one becomes truly attached to Krishna, because this represents the level of asakti. After the stage of attachment, asakti, when tears flow continuously, one will feel purva rag, intense mood of separation experienced before meeting Krishna. As a devotee chants, he will think, O Krishna, I can't live without you. O Shrimati Radharani, I can't live without you. Tavevasmi, Tavevasmi, Najivami Tvaya Vina, Itivigaya Devi, Tvamnayamam Charnatikam Radhitam. Without you, where have you gone? Please give me your darshan. When we're actually weeping 24 hours a day and rolling on the ground, then Nayanam Galar Dashundariya. So the 6th shloka represents bhava, at which time the Siddhadeya manifests automatically. Where does the Siddhadeya come from? It is in our sarup, our original spiritual form. Our Siddhadeya does not come from anywhere outside ourselves. In our sarup, everything is perfect. So to realize this simply requires connection with sarup shakti, antaranga chinmaya shakti. When that connection is made, the Siddhadeya is automatically manifest and all spiritual sentiments of love appear in our heart. Krishna will manage everything. Only pray always, O Krishna, O Gurudev, when will I realize my Siddhadeya and chant Shuddha Nam? O Srimati Radharani, when will I become your maidservant, your Palyadasi, your protected maidservant, your Nitya Sakhi? When will I reside in Radhakund, in my spiritual body? When will I attain that perfection? The aspiring devotee must be patient. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st canto, Lord Narayan appeared to Narada for 1 moment and disappeared. Narada cried bitterly and lamented, O Lord Narayan, you're gone. But then an aerial voice said, O Narada, you must wait for my mercy, and then you'll see my sarup. Keep chanting Harinam and preach Harikata to others. When death comes, you'll return to me. So as is told in the 1st canto of Bhagavatam, when death came, Narada Muni left his material body and a Siddhadeya appeared and he realized himself to be an associate of Bhagavan Lord Narayan. Where did his Siddhadeya come from? It was not in the beginning, or when did it come? It came at the most advanced stage of his Krishna consciousness. So how do we practically realize the Siddhadeya? It's very helpful and important for devotees to develop utkantita bhav, longing for the day for the Siddhadeya to appear. But don't imagine, oh, I have the Siddhadeya, before it actually manifests. We can pray, O Krishna, I want to live eternally in Vrindavan, in a divine spiritual body. We should always have that as our objective, and hanker to attain the service of Radha and Krishna. Eagerness, great eagerness. Not expect to attain our Siddhadeya before we understand all the Siddhantas, such as Prahlad Maharaj teaches in 7th canto, and Chitraketu in 8th canto, and Damodar Lila. Siddha means first become Siddha, a perfect devotee. Well, how will Siddhadeya manifest when the body is still material? In the Goswami's books, in the writings of Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami, the bona fide process for achieving perfection is explicitly given. First, pray for this perfection. O Krishna, O Gurudev, when will that day come when I realize my Siddhadeya and chant Shuddha Nam? One's devotion should be so steady firm and mature, that upon seeing a beautiful young lady or man, one will not be disturbed in the least. When we have no material desires at all, and when we're qualified, we'll always be living in Vrindavan and Radhakund under the guidance of a self-realized soul, a Tattvagyan and Rasika Bhakta. Then we attain Siddhadeha. So we should try to pursue the bona fide process laid down by our acharyas, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. First engage in good sadhana bhajan, become mature in bhakti. If we follow sincerely, Krishna automatically sent a realized soul to help us. First know the aim and objective of our sadhana, our sadhya. Study bhajan rahasyam. Try to serve and realize the shlokas one by one. If we're factually practicing these, then these qualities of the third shloka, Trinadapi, may enter. Then the fourth shloka, Nadanam, Najanam. We should become detached from all worldly material tastes and desires. Then when we become pure, and when we are always chanting and remembering Krishna without being disturbed by any obstacles, then we can enter the fifth shloka, Ai Nanda Tanda Shakinkaram. This is all basically summary of Bhajan Rahasyam. Entering this fifth shloka is the beginning of our Siddhadeya. When we realize ourselves to be eternal servants of Krishna in a specific relationship, all aspects of our eternal relationship with Krishna are already in our Atma, just as potency of a full-grown tree is present within the seed of that tree. With air, light, water, the seed will sprout, and gradually all the leaves, branches, mandris, flowers, and finally fruits will manifest. The entire creeper or tree is within the seed. But only in the presence of the air, water, and light, when they touch it, do all its features sprout, otherwise not. Similarly, this analogy can be applied to the Siddhadeya. The full potency of our pure bhakti is present in our Atma. In the fifth shloka, the Jiva Sarup is revealed. The experience of one who has realized his Siddhadeya. When a devotee realizes his Atma and understands he's an eternal servant of Krishna, he has no more worldly attachments. Then the Sarup Shakti of Sri Krishna, or his eternal associates like Srimati Radharani, Lita Sakhi, Rupa Mandri, Raghunath Das Goswami, or any liberated devotee in the parampara, this Sarup Shakti coming as Ladini Shakti and Sanvit will mercifully manifest in that devotee's heart. Then he will begin to weep and cry constantly. While chanting the holy name, he will roll on the earth and chanting, O Govinda, O Damodar, O Madhava, where are you? The devotee may sometimes get a glimpse of Krishna in a spurti, then immediately run towards him. And when Krishna disappears from his vision, the devotee will roll on the ground in separation. If a person does not feel this type of separation from Krishna, his Siddhadeya will never manifest. When one actually has feelings of separation, his Siddhadeya will manifest, but not before. Our goal is Siddhadeya. What is this Siddha Pranali? Who invented it? Who started it? Siddha Pranali is Lord Chaitanya Shikshastakam. One should first know he is an eternal servant of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and try to follow this principle of humility. Become detached from worldly activities and always to be chanting and remembering Krishna 24 hours a day under advanced devotee's guidance. Nectar of Instruction number 8 says, Tan Nama Rupa Charitari Sukirtananu Smrityo Kramena. This is the essence of all advice, to spend our full time nicely chanting and remembering Krishna's Nam, Rup, Gun, and Leela by engaging the tongue and mind. This is the way to live under the guidance of an advanced devotee. Following the footsteps of an advanced devotee means to become deeply attached to devotional service. This is the real Siddha Pranali. Raghunath Das Goswami explained this Siddha Pranali in Manashiksha. All the prayers in Manashiksha are Pranali, which means a process or a methodology. Don't artificially imagine, oh, I am a gopi, I am Lalita Gopi, I am Champa Manjari. From where and from when, whom did this artificial Siddhadeya come? It's not in our culture or teachings of Lord Chaitanya. The real Siddhadeya spiritual form manifests when we follow the correct process from Shraddha to Nishtha, etc. by purely following Navavita Bhakti and Panchanga Bhakti, if we will sincerely follow these processes, Radha and Krishna will mercifully give us our siddhadeya. Try to understand the process taught by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Shravana Dasha, Smarana Dasha, and Sampati Dasha, the siddhadeya will manifest. Shravana Dasha, one hears from the bona fide guru, he hears the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the philosophy of Rupa Goswami. And Shravana Dasha, we learn who we are, the name of our transcendental body. The guru knows this. One claims to be guru but does not know all this, and by kalpana, imagination, gives this information. It's pretentious. The bona fide guru knows everything. Your name, your relationship with Krishna and gopis, your place of residence, whether Radhakunandagram Barsana, the name of your father, mother, your seva, your nature, your beautiful form. The guru then reveals to his disciple his particular seva to Radha Krishna Yugal and his Paliyadasi Bhav. Are all 11 items in Shravana Dasha. We must hear and understand the process for perfection from Jiva Dharma, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. The summary of Bhaktivinoda Thakura's teachings are in two lines. Jiva Doya Krishnanam Sarva Dharma Sar. Jiva Doya Krishnanam Sarva Dharma Sar. This is the sum and substance, actually, of all the teachings of the Vedas and Vedanta, Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, Puranas, Smriti, Shrutis, Pancharatra, Itihasa, Mahabharata, and Ramayana. In essence, there are two principles, Jivadoya and Krishnanam. What does Jivadoya mean? Jivadoya means to distribute mercy to conditioned souls by turning their mentality towards Krishna's seva. This is doya, or mercy. Jivadoya is attained only by chanting Krishna's holy name. Krishna's name is Krishna himself, but we can chant Shudanam only in the association of bona fide guru and Vaishnavas. Without the association, we cannot actually chant pure name or engage in pure bhakti. What is Shuddha Bhakti? Raghunuga Bhakti is Shuddha Bhakti. When our hearts accept the same mood that Rupa Goswami possesses in his heart, the mood of a Paliyadasi of Srimati Radharani, then it is actually called Raghunuga Bhakti. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Yamuna Devi, presiding deity of the river, Kalindi Devi, the daughter of Surya, she's the sister of Yamaraj, the source in the Kalinda Mountains. And Rupa Goswami's Yamuna Mashtakam, he says that Yamuna Devi, number 8, he says Yamuna Devi is a liquid form of Vishakha. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes how Yamuna became the wife of Dwarkanath Sri Krishna after Krishna Arjuna saw her doing austerities. In Srimad Bhagavatam, if you have read, they came to Vrindavan and Arjuna and Krishna said, Arjuna, who is that? Maybe Hastinapura or whatever. Who is that doing austerities? It's in Bhagavatam, 10th canto. And it was Jamuna, she was doing austerities. And why? And she said, because she wanted to get Krishna as her. So then he took her on the chariot and took her to Dwarka. So that Yamuna that went to Dwarka was an expansion, Kalindi. And Yamuna stayed here. She has black complexion, rides on a tortoise carrying a water pot. Brinda Devi is the presiding deity of Krishna's Lila Shakti. She's in charge of the forests and her activities, and she commands an army of Van Devis, whose duty is to maintain the gardens and groves and provide garlands and other flower ornaments. Brindadevi also directs the buds and animals, the birds and animals, to sport and sing for the pleasure of Radha Krishna. Brindadevi has trained parrots, which are famous in scriptures, for reciting long explanations of Krishna's beauty and poetry, and are expert at carrying messages and spying on the rivals of Radharani. Brindadevi personally directs the weather and changing of seasons and other natural environmental arrangements by choreography by a choreography, the seva, the Ritu Devis. Ritu Devis are the goddesses in charge of the seasons. Vrindadevi keeps many storerooms throughout Braja which are filled with paraphernalia used for the different leelas, such as musical instruments, dancing dresses, bathing clothes, food preparations and serving utensils, pitchkaris and syringes for holy. In the Astakam by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he glorifies Tulsi Devi. Tula means equal or matched, and Tulsi means matchless. There is no equal or matched to Tulsi. Now sometimes the question is asked, what is the difference between a kunj and a nikunj? It was asked in Delhi. A kunja in eternal Vrindavan is a simple bower house or landscaped thicket entwined with tendrils and canopies of flower creepers in which the divine couple of Radha and Krishna sport and engage in various loving intimacies. A nikunj is a tighter, more secluded and private bower room in which more confidential leelas are enjoyed. The walls of the nikunj have small holes in the creeper lattices through which the most elevated sakis, like mandris especially, Rupa Mandri, they may peer through those holes, which are called interstices. They may peer to watch Radha and Krishna's intimate leelas. Thus they can narrate the pastimes and poetry for the enjoyment of other gopis who would faint if they saw these leelas. So nikunjas are very, very private and they're more design involved. So then sometimes they want to ask the question, if this coward boys know anything or understand anything about the Madhurya Leela of Krishna, the gopas, because they're in Sakiras. Do they have any purview or access? So it's told that in Radhakund, it's described, Madha Mangal and Subal appear and disappear according to the wish of Krishna. When Krishna comes to Radhakund, they may hang around the outside of the kunj, awaiting an order from Krishna, or they may go on some errand for Krishna. Some gopas, or coward boys, have very intimate connection with Krishna, and they witness practically all the confidential pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Some gopas even have access into the inner chambers of Krishna and the living quarters where the sakis and mandris can never go. Krishna stole the gopis' clothes, and when he went to do that, he brought a few boyfriends with him. Of course, says in Bhagavatam purports they were just a little 2-year-old or something. Of course, Krishna was only 7 or 6. He was 6, I suppose. And Krama Deepika and Gotamiya Tantra explains that 4 gopas are in the Priyasaka category: Sridham, Sudham, Vasudham, and Kinkini, who are 4 of the 8 major sakas. And these 4 sakas, Sridham, Radharani's older brother, Sudham, Vasudham, and Kinkini, they're advised, or it's advised in Krama Deepika and Gotamiya Tantra, they should be worshipped during puja along with Krishna. Why? These particular 4, although we often hear about Subal being so intimate, which he is, but these particular 4 are Krishna's extended portions. Extended portions. They're situated in 4 corners of the yoga pit. These 4 should be worshipped along with Krishna because these 4 coward boys, Sridham, Sudham, Vasudham, and Kinkini, they represent the external manifestations of Krishna's indwelling witness. For example, Sridham is Krishna's buddhi, intelligence, according to Jiva Goswami's Srimad Bhagavatam Tika. This is Sridham. Sudham is Krishna's ahankar, egoism. Vasudham is Krishna's chitta, heart, and Kinkani is Krishna's mind, or man. There is no confidential pastime that Krishna secretly performs with the Braja Gopis that's not witnessed by these four boys. Now, this is a very interesting and unusual statement, which comes from the Krama Deepika and Gotamiya Tantra. So people ask the question, do the Gopas have any purview? So of course, as Radharani, the Sakis and Mandris are Kaya Vyuha of Radharani, direct expansion. So Mandris, sometimes they sleep in the same bed with Radharani and Krishna in the corner of the bed, and they witness so many intimate things. But they're really just Radharani herself. These are the very intimate, direct Kaya Vyuha of Mandri and Mandris and Sakis of Radharani, not the sadhana siddhas like us or whatever. We may pull ceiling fans or may look from outside. But these particular four sakas are direct expansions of Krishna. They're his own, as it says, they're him. They're part of him. They're external portions of Krishna himself. And they're sitting in four corners of the yoga pit, and they're worshipped along with Krishna. Because they represent four manifestations of Krishna's self. Isn't his hankar, his identity, his egoism, his buddhi, intelligence, and mind, or heart. Very interesting discussion. So Rupa Manjari, she's 13 years old and 6 months, and her complexion is deep yellow complexion, a little bit yellowish green like this tilak you see for sale sometimes in Vrindavan. It's called Gorochan. Deep yellowish complexion. And her dress has the eyes of a peacock tail feather. Her father's name is Ratna Banu, who is a brother of Rishabhanu. Therefore Rupa Manjari is Radharani's cousin. Bua or Boa or whatever you want to say, whatever it is, some Hindi name for that. In other words, Radharani's father is the brother of... Yeah, Radharani's father's brother is the father of Rupa Manjari. Rupa Manjari's mother is Yamuna, that's her name, some other gopi. And her brother is Sudam. Her family lives in Barsana. Rupa Manjari mainly stays in Yavat with her husband, Durmad. Durmad means foul-minded one. Bad mind. Yeah, Durmad. So Rupa Manjari, who is the Sri Rupa of... Rupa Manjari has a Rupa of Radharani, Sri Rupa. She is married to Durmada, who is the brother of Abhimanyu, and the son of Jatila. Factually, Durmad never leaves the home. Factually, Rupa Manjari is never home. She's always engaged in the Kunja Seva of Srimati Radharani 24 hours a day, taking only occasional naps in her grove named Chandra Kunj. Occasionally, Rupa Manjari takes naps in a grove named Chandra Kunj, which is near Alita's grove by Radhakund. Rupa Manjari's seva provides fresh betel nuts for Radha Krishna because they always need a lot of fresh nuts to chew because they're constantly giving away remnants to their confidential sakis, who consider this prasad the topmost nectar. Also, it's told that Rupa Manjari's main seva is massaging the feet of Radha Shyam. She works very hard organizing the Kunja Sevas in different ways. Those in her group will learn how to execute various sevas under her direction. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Gita Mala, Siddhi Lalasa, the tenth song describes what it's actually like to meet Rupa Manjari and begin to render eternal service under her personal direction. And this is also mentioned, this is near the end of Navadvip Bhava Taranga by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in verse 153 through 156. Shri Radhe Shyam. There's some interesting discussion about the Kaustubha Mani. Krishna wears a very special and unique gem called Kaustubha Mani, which is sometimes described as a ruby. It's sometimes described as infinite consciousness. It's quite an extraordinary. It's not really just a gem or just a jewel. In Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura's Swapna Vilas Amrita, it says that that the Kaustubha Mani is Akuta Gyan, the knower of Krishna's intentions. In other words, his gem and jewel knows what Krishna wants. Thus the Kaustubha gem projected an illumination which revealed the entire scene that Radharani saw the night before in her swapna or dream. If one knows that brief pastime of Swapna Vilas Amritam, then in there Radharani wakes up in Kunj and tells Krishna, "Oh, I saw a man very much beautiful like you, but he was golden in color. And there were so many people with him, and they were dancing very much like we dance on the banks of the Yamuna, but it was some other river. And we have rasa, but they were engaged in kirtan. Who is this?" And Krishna smiled. And then in his Kaustubha gem, he illuminated that same dream. And he said, "Actually, this is in the future, I will come as Gauranga," and all these things. So he revealed that entire scene that Radharani saw the night before in her dream. She saw the vision of a mysterious golden complexioned Brahmin who was wildly chanting and dancing. And all moving and non-moving beings were also seen in that vision, emanating from the brilliant transcendental Kaustubha gem. In verse 7, Radharani says that the Kaustubha gem is Rati Padam Akila Jivan. Rati Padam Akila Jivan, which means that the Kaustubha gem is the medium or the platform allowing all souls to share affection with Krishna. Since the Kaustubha gem is placed and intimately situated on the chest of Krishna. Radharani confirms that Krishna uses his Kaustubha gem to project or represent visions of himself before all jivas. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, chapter 11, verse 10, in Sridhar Swami's Tika, he says that the Kaustubha gem represents the fact that the Lord holds the Siddha Jiva Chaitanya, the pure consciousness of the spirit soul within his own effulgence. The origin of the Kaustubha gem. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, chapter 8, verse 6, it says that the Kaustubha gem was generated from the churning of the milk ocean. And then later, in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 16, verse 6, it describes that the Kaliya Patnis, or the Naga Patnis, the wives of Kaliya, when they were trying to appease Krishna and reduce his punishment of their husband, because he was finally surrendering, and they were accepting him at that point, they were offering various gems and jewels for the pleasure of the Lord. It says at that time, in the commentaries, that the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kali, they offered the Kaustubha gem to Krishna from their own collection. And Vishwanath Chakravarti's Tika, which we see in Sarita Darshini, he says that first Krishna made his own Kaustubha gem enter into Kali's treasury, and later he caused the wives to offer it back to him. So obviously it was secretly taken from Krishna's neck and put in his treasure box. The appearance of the Kaustubha gem is also recounted in Harivamsa chapter 22 and is also mentioned in Agni Puran chapter 3. In Valmiki's Ramayana, Balakanda Sarga 45 and Mahabharata Adiparva 1837, it confirms that the Kaustubha gem floated up from the ghee produced at the time of churning the milk ocean. It's said that this transcendental gem of emerald green color, has the relief of a reclining white calf upon its surface. Cow. If you ever see some early paintings in ISKCON, they will show Krishna, Vishnu, whoever, wearing this Kaustubha mani around his neck, which is characteristic. And generally they paint it somewhat red in color, as if it's a ruby. Because somewhere it said it's ruby. And if you look in the center, inset in the center, there's a little white cow or calf in there. Now we're going to discuss something about Krishna's flute. Krishna plays three kinds of flutes. The veno. A veno is 6 inches long and has 6 holes. It has a high pitch, which is especially useful in the pasture lands, since the high pitch echoes out nicely through the hillsides and valleys and would sound too shrill at close quarters indoors. So it's very useful for cowherding and tending the cows and calling them from the pastures back to Nandagaon. The vamshi is 15 to 8 inches long. It has a lower tune and has 8 holes or more. Vamshi is Krishna's all-purpose flute. Throughout the day, Krishna plays many different ragas and raganis on a variety of vamshis. He has different vamshis to enhance the atmosphere and various events throughout the day and night in Goloka Vrindavan. A murali is a thick, long, 1 meter long bass flute with only 4 playing holes tuned to the pentatonic scales. The low-pitched murali defeats the cooing of a cuckoo bird. Especially Krishna uses it at night. Because of the length of this flute, which is 3 feet long or 1 meter, it's very deep in its range. Krishna uses this flute specifically to call the Brajagopis at night, since they are trained to hear its very low, unobtrusive sound, which is not easily perceived by their elders, who are at that time of night very distracted with evening household commotion. The murali comes alive in the dead of night when everyone is sleeping and all of creation is sleeping. It also enchants the universe with its sweet, low, gentle, soothing tunes. During the day, sometimes Radharani Krishna steals Krishna's flute, and she's known as Vamshi Chori. She does this every day. That's a very interesting discussion in Nectar of Devotion, page 280, which you must be remembering. Talks about the different rasas and the color and the presiding deity of each rasa. You must be remembering that very particularly. So there, of course, there's a direct mellow, Mukhya Ras, and Gona Ras, which is indirect mellows. So there are 12 rasas, 5 direct mellows or Mukhya Rasas, and 7 indirect mellows or Gona Rasas. So we'll start with Shanta Ras, which is called neutrality, and the deity of this rasa is Kapila Muni, and the color is white, this rasa. And this next rasa is Dasya Ras, which is servitude, and is multicolored, or Chitra, multicolored. And Madhav is the lord of this. Madhav may mean a form of Vishnu. There are 24 forms of Vishnu. They also have names like Damodar, Govinda, Madhav, depending on the placement of the 4 symbols. And fraternity is Sakiras, and the color of fraternity is Aruna, or orange. And Upendra, I suppose, is the younger brother of Indra, who is also known as Vamanadeva. Right? So then after that we have paternity, or motherhood or fatherhood, Vatsalya. This is pink, and the deity controlling that is Nrisingadeva, which is interesting. But this is told in Nectar Devotion. Then conjugal ras, this is Madhurbhav, and the color of this ras is Sham. Black is Sham. This is actually the color of this mellow. And the lord of this is Nanda Nandan. That would be pretty obvious. Now the seven indirect rasas is laughter, Hasiras. And this color is off-white, represented by Balaram. And then the eighth rasa is astonishment, Adbhuta ras. This is represented by yellow or yellow-brown, and this is Kurma. Then the ninth ras is compassion, Karuna ras. So there's Hasya, Adbhuta, Karuna. This color is smoky, and this is Raghava, Lord Raghava. And the tenth ras is anger, Rudra. This is red. This says Bhargava. Don't know exactly what that means, Bhargava. Then 11th is dread or Bayanaka. This is black color, and that's Varaha. It's pretty dreadful. And the tenth is ghastliness, Vibhatsa. And this is a blue color represented by Mina, the fish. So these are some, what all these things actually mean, it's not so clear. But there's different colors of rasa. So, of course, Madhuras is Sham, Shamras. And that's why when you go to Tota Gopinath, you see that Radharani and Lalita, they're black in color because they're totally absorbed in Gopinath's ras, Shamras. Radhe Sham, Hare Krishna.